I want to welcome Jonathan Kay. He's a journalist and a senior editor with Quillette and author of the book Among the Truthers, A Journey Through America's Growing Conspiracist Underground. Jonathan, thanks so much for getting up early.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
So, Jonathan, before we get into the specific September 11th conspiracy theories and your reaction to them, and I'm going to invite listeners to call in as well and bring up with you any questions they have about these various theories. They can do that at 800-848-9222. Tell me about your book, Among the Truthers, A Journey Through America's Growing Conspiracist Underground. What inspired you to write this book, and why do you think the conspiracist movement is growing?
Well, at the time, I was comment editor at a big newspaper, and this involved getting lots of letters to the editor and just seeing what people thought every day. And I was shocked by how many people believed in conspiracy theories, not just about 9/11, but about all sorts of subjects. And most of these people were not dumb people. You know, it's easy to dismiss somebody if they're obviously dumb or you know, mentally unstable. But a lot of them were people who had good jobs, who seemed reasonable, who seemed to have responsible professional positions in life, and they had these really elaborate theories. And I became fascinated about why. And 9/11, of course, was a great tragedy of our time. I wrote this book, got published 10 years ago, so that became the focus of the book because that was what so many of the theories were centered on.
All right, fair enough. Now, I'll invite listeners to bring up with you their own theory at 800-848-9222. But let me ask you about some of the more common theories that I've heard from listeners and some guests that we've been having on over the course of the last couple of days. The most common that I've heard in terms of a deviation from the official story is that the Twin Towers were brought down not by the airplanes and the fire they caused, but by what's been described as a controlled demolition, that there were explosives placed within the building and that caused the building to collapse, not the airplanes and the fire they caused. Why is that theory true or untrue?
Look, internal demolition, yeah, that's one thing that's common to pretty much every flavor of 9/11 conspiracy theory you hear. Before my life as a writer, I used to be an engineer. I was a metallurgical engineer, not a civil engineer, I should specify. But when it comes to controlled demolition of even a building a fraction the size of the World Trade Center towers, this is a job that takes months. The internal columns, everything has to be stripped. You have teams of hundreds of experts preparing for a long time to do this. The idea that this kind of project could have been done on the sly in a building that something like 40,000 people were working there, WTC-1 and WTC-2, I mean, it's just, and that no one would have seen anything. And of course, by the way, there's all sorts of like piggyback theories about how this was done. But for anybody who's worked in the engineering trades, especially in terms of construction or demolition or something like that, people who've actually done demolition jobs, again, on buildings that are even a tiny fraction of the size. These are some of the biggest structures in the entire world. The theory makes no sense. Now, it's very easy to take a historical event and point out oddities. I don't know any historical event where there aren't some unexplained phenomena. And if you look at the video analysis that's done of the collapse of the World Trade Center, Loose Change is a famous example, that film, you know, they will point out this little thing. If you freeze the frame here, it looks like this. Absolutely true. You can, you know, you can do that with JFK assassination, most famously, but anything. What I do is I flip it. I say, okay, what's your narrative? If you're talking about internal demolition, give me the narrative of how this enormous engineering enterprise takes place in a building that is used daily by tens of thousands of people, and somehow these nefarious conspirators are allowed to get away with it. And when you flip the narrative and ask people to explain their theory, often, you know, they'll say, oh, well, I'm just asking questions. I'm just a skeptic. I'm just pointing out oddities in the videos. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to let you get away with that. Tell me your narrative for how this happened. And there is no plausible narrative for how that happened. And internal demolition doesn't make sense. for a million different reasons. Again, for anybody who has expertise or knowledge of how engineering works.
Well, so one of the engineers that I spoke with earlier from a group called Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth and a filmmaker that I spoke with yesterday, they both claimed that there was explosive residue, I think it's thermosite, that was found in samples that were removed from the World Trade Center. Is that true?
So I think you're referring to thermite?
Thermite, excuse me.
It's been
a long week, trust me.
Yeah, no. Oh, well, sure. And by the way, thermite is a fairly obscure substance. Thermite isn't even an explosive. So I used to be a metallurgical engineer. Thermite is a pyrotechnic. And it's absolutely true that thermite can be used to generate enormously high temperatures. It can melt steel. And there are some laboratory and even engineering applications that you can use thermite to cut through steel. And one of the reasons conspiracy theorists focus on it is it's one of the few things out there that if you were looking, you know, if in a reality-based scenario you were actually looking to cut through steel, for instance, steel girders, you could use thermite. It's not an explosive. It wouldn't be used for any kind of real on-the-ground demolition of a structure. Certainly not like this completely untested and unprecedented application of thermite to bring down some of the largest skyscrapers on the planet. So that was never made any sense to me. The group you're talking about, AE, I think it's called AE 911. The leader of that is Richard Gage, and I interviewed Richard Gage on multiple occasions for my book. I was in California. He came to Toronto. I interviewed him. I saw him speak in New York City. Richard Gage was an architect. He designed, I think 1, 2, 3 level shopping centers in California. His credentials as an architect are accurate. He's also a conspiracy theorist. He's very careful. You know, this trick I was telling you where, like, he won't give you the actual narrative of how this happened, but he had, I think at the time I interviewed him, he had like a 572 slideshow that he wouldn't show the whole thing because it would take like 8 hours, but he would show a lot of them. And again, it was all aimed at this thing like, well, if you freeze it here, see the little squibs of smoke and see, you know, residue. There's residue of all kinds of crap in the building, you know, well, millions of tons of debris and crap. Pretty much every toxin known to man can be found in that thing. So if you're looking for chemical garbage in the residue of a skyscraper, you're going to find it in most cases. But the fact that this guy, Richard Gage, he's been leading this group for almost 20 years, the fact that he happens to be an architect and he happens to have a few thousand signatories who are also engineers and architects, again, there's still no plausible narrative about how this internal demolition thing works. And the thermite thing, to me, makes it more ridiculous because, again, thermite is not an explosive. Thermite is a pyrotechnic. You can combine it with explosives in some way. And, I mean, I guess in theory, if you spent years and years field testing this stuff, maybe you could bring down structures with it. But the idea that this is going to be done, again, without any of these office workers knowing in this, like, you know, some kind of weird pilot plant for a new technology to bring down a structure as part of a conspiracy that, if discovered, would mean the ends of the careers for untold numbers of prominent people who are organizing it. It just, the whole narrative makes no sense.
All right. Well, we're talking with Jonathan Kay. If you have questions for him or if you have a theory about the World Trade Center that you'd like him to address, give us a call, 800-848-9222, 1-800-848-WABC. Another common theory has to do with the Pentagon. Some people have claimed that it wasn't actually American Airlines Flight 77 that hit the Pentagon, but instead maybe a missile or a drone strike of some sort. What has your research indicated about that possibility?
Yeah, actually, that's an interesting sub-branch of it. And I know that there was a French author who wrote a book advancing that theory. I don't get as many questions about that one because, of course, the scale of the tragedy in Washington, well, in the Washington area, while horrible, wasn't, of course, as nearly as severe as it was in Manhattan. The question then becomes, well, then what happened to all the people who were on board that aircraft? And sometimes if you go deep into that particular subculture of 9/11 conspiracism, there are all these like really ambitious theories about like what could they've done. You know, if you're going to use a some kind of missile or drone or something to attack the Pentagon, you still have this plane full of people you've got to account for. And so I think one sub-branch of that theory has it like the plane landed, I don't know, in the Midwest and everyone got out. And just, again, we're asked to believe somehow that these people, like nothing ever, we never learned anything about it, that there was a radar blip on the screen, people just kind of ignored it. The whereabouts of the plane, the whereabouts of the people. Again, the narrative makes no sense. And is largely based on sort of technical artifacts, like, well, the only real footage of that, if I remember correctly, consists of a gas station security camera, and you have a few right. frames of choppy footage that exists on that. And yeah, I mean, if you look at choppy black and white footage from a gas station security camera from 20 years ago, I mean, anyone listening to this can convince you that that contains all kinds of crazy images, because the human eye can reconstruct, you know, give somebody a vague image and they can interpret it in all sorts of ways if you plant an idea in their head. You know, had this tragedy happened today, the whole thing would have been captured by 50 different cell phone cameras. Of course, you know, this was only 20 years ago, but technologically it was another era, so that's the only footage we have of it. But I guess, you know, people, among other many other details, you still have to explain what would happen to this plane with all these people in it.
Right.
I've never heard any kind of convincing theory of that.
Right. Talking with Jonathan Kay, his book, if you want to check it out, is Among the Truthers, A Journey Through America's Growing Conspiracist Underground. Another theory, somebody that I, you know, have worked with, who is a very professional guy, was working in Pennsylvania 20 years ago in the media. He insists that Flight 93, which crashed in Shanksville, he insists that it didn't crash as a result of the crew and the passengers taking it over. He believes that that plane was shot down. What do you think of that theory?
You know, it's interesting. Again, it's not something I can disprove, but as you probably know, there are also theories about the shooting down of a plane in 1996 in Long Island Sound.
Right, TWA Flight 800.
Yeah, and that, what's interesting about that case is I think there was, that theory was taken more seriously and I think investigated, because there were credible reports that people saw like flashes and sort of unexplained lights that might be associated with a missile. And also the way that plane just was destroyed midair really was kind of unsettling. I think it just sort of burst into flames shortly after takeoff. If I remember correctly, this is 25 years ago. And those things are very hard to disprove. I mean, we saw, as you know, a couple of years ago, the Iranians accidentally shot down a passenger aircraft, and they spent days denying it before they finally had to admit it.
Right. And by the way, the United States also mistakenly shot down an Iranian passenger aircraft as well.
Right. And the Soviets shot down.
Right. So it does happen. Yeah,
it does. Yeah, that sort of thing should be taken seriously. And, you know, again, in the case of the Korean aircraft, you know, and also in Iran, and hundreds of people die. This is a real deal. And during the Cold War, especially, you had militaries hair trigger alert. And so it was sort of mistaken friend or foe identification type stuff. In this case, over Pennsylvania, I guess there's two possible theories. One is that it was a mistaken friend or foe identification type thing and shot down by someone trigger happy in the military. Why that would happen when it's not near any kind of sensitive target, there's no reason to make that kind of decision. It's certainly not near any kind of national border. I don't understand that. The other theory that I've heard is, well, this plane, because it had been deviated from its course by all these people on board the aircraft who got in the way of the hijackers, and presumably who got in the way of whatever non-Al-Qaeda conspiracy was going on, according to this narrative, the plane became this asset that had to be destroyed, and that's why it was done. Again, it's not something that could be disproven, but it's just, it's a completely weird theory. Like, why they're in Pennsylvania? And how did the conspirators, or the putative conspirators, how did they have, like, ground-to-air assets in the middle of rural Pennsylvania that were available to shoot down this aircraft? Like, did they have ground-to-air missile batteries, like, all over the United States?
Well, I mean, I guess the theory could also go that because planes had collided with the World Trade Center, that the military shot it down because they feared that it was going to hit another target.
I mean, this is an example where the real story is such a disgrace that I think these conspiracy theories take away from that. I mean, one of the real sad parts of 9/11 is how slow it was for the military to scramble jets from, you know, I think it was Otis Air Force Base they scrambled from, and was it Langley they scrambled from, and it was this, like, very slow, cumbersome Cold War era system. And I think the jets, I think if I remember correctly, it was things like two F-16 jets were scrambled. I forget, maybe it was Otis. And they headed out over the Atlantic. They headed in the wrong direction. Rather than it being a conspiracy of, like, again, these conspiracy theories tend to have these comic book villains who are, like, all-knowing and have all this crazy tech and respond in real time to any, like, sort of like Megamind type stuff. Usually when you do the investigation, it's the opposite. It's a bunch of bumbling people who are responding to yesterday's threats, and they make a whole bunch of mistakes. And that's tragically, that's the story of 9/11. It wasn't these, like, hyper competent scheming, American based conspirators. The American authorities, and tragically this happens a lot, is just they weren't competent to deal with this threat.
Let me try and get in a couple of questions for you before we run out of time, Jonathan. Let me say hello to Nikki in Manhattan. Nikki, what's your question for Jonathan?
Hi, Frank. Yes, I wondered, in Jonathan's investigation of these various conspiracy groups, did he find any common threads amongst them, be it sources of their funding or specific motivators or political affiliations or anything that might be a surprise tie from one to the other?
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting.
You know, that's a great question. And one of the things I write in the book is the common denominator with these people is there's a breach of trust with the society around them in many cases. And it could come from the right. It could come from the left. And often it's very deeply personal. Like Richard Gage, who I talked about, leader of the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, he had a real, you know, I think he's probably talked about, he had a real personal and professional crisis in his life around the time this was happening. There was one guy, for instance, he was from Serbia, and he was convinced that the 1999 NATO campaign against Serbia over Kosovo, that, like, he couldn't believe that the whole world had turned against Serbia, and it, like, kind of just, it destroyed his confidence in good actors working in the United States or anywhere else. And it kind of just, like, he didn't trust anything anymore because it just destroyed his trust. You see this in politics. If, you know, the wrong party gets elected, people are like, I can't believe it. Like, it just blows their mind and they lose their trust in the democratic system. And so they start looking around, well, it must have been a conspiracy. And the problem is, once people lose trust in one thing, they often lose trust, like, in everything. So it isn't just the government. It's also big corporations. It's big pharma. It's the media. You know, it's me. You know, I'm part of the media. And one of the frustrations of writing this book is I knew a lot of people who were conspiracy theorists. They would trust me because I'm a journalist. So I'm part of the problem. So it's very difficult to disabuse people of conspiracy theories.
Jonathan, on that note, we're going to have to end it there. I appreciate you taking the time this morning. I hope we can talk again in the future.